the binding stone. Faye's entire body twitched in shock. She stared at Nathan with wide eyes as he topped her up. When he withdrew his finger, her tongue lolled out of her mouth, and her eyes had glazed over. She moaned softly.
"Couldn't you at least wait until after the battle to stick it in her and fill her up?"
Sen said with a smirk. She was almost empty, Nathan said, ignoring the innuendo.
"I'm sure she was. After all, you were busy filling me up earlier."
Sen rubbed her belly. "Do you have to be so lewd?" Nathan said. Faye blinked and came to her senses. She placed a finger against her sapphire. A satisfied sigh escaped her lips.
"Does the real thing feel that good?" she asked Sen.
Sen glared at Faye.
"Why are you asking me?"
Faye tilted her head to one side, then grinned.
"All right, you don't have a gem."
That had to be on purpose, Nathan thought. He decided to intervene before they began to fight each other instead of the demonic horde that was closing in on the palisade. "Focus," he said. "I want the two of you to follow some specific orders. If we pull this off, hopefully the demons will pull back for this wave." Nathan hid a frown. Given how long it had been since the start of the invasion, he suspected that the second wave of demons had already attacked. The amount of demons they had killed was far too high for a single wave, but there hadn't been a noticeable gap in the assault. "I'm going to deal with the left flank. Sen, I want you to hit anything in the center with rapid-fire spells. Force them to charge up one side of the valley," he ordered. "Faye, tell the officers to bombard the left flank as well."
"Won't that mean they'll overwhelm the wall on the right side?" Sen asked.
"That's what I want," Nathan said. "Faye, once you give out the orders, gather all the hoplites you can and stand behind the wall on the right-hand side. Once the demons break through, crush them." Faye grinned.
"Oh, I think I get it." "Well, I don't,"
Sen complained. Nathan ruffled her hair and had his hand batted away for his efforts. "Let's go," he said. By the time he made it to the left side of the wall, the catapult fire fell exclusively on this side. The demonic advance looked noticeably lopsided. Sen's constant flow of fireballs and flames split the enemy down the center. Faye stood in position behind the wall. Everything looked good so far. A pentagon appeared over Nathan's wrists, like a pair of shackles. He held his hands together in front of him, palms crossed. The pentagon glowed blue and slowly spun in a circle. This was the most powerful spell Nathan knew how to cast without relying on the binding stone. He still wanted to save as much of the binding stone's power for later as possible. But right now, he needed more raw power than he could get with third and fourth rank spells. Even supercharged spells weren't enough. This fifth rank spell did something special. The demons either didn't see Nathan's spell or didn't care. Boulders and bolts rained down on them. They nearly made it to the wall. Nathan heard Sen shouting at him over the din of the battle. The pentagon flared in his hands. Nathan pressed it against the wall. The palisade glowed. This entire half of the wall emitted an eerie blue light. A trickling sound crept into Nathan's ears. Water fell from between the gaps in the logs that comprised the wall, at first slowly, then in a tremendous rush. Within seconds, the demons found themselves fighting waist-high water rushing forward from the wall. They bellowed in surprise and waded through it. But the water continued to rise, and it began to glow, like the wall behind it. Soon the demons at the front were picked up by the waves and pushed back, over the heads of those behind them. Waves and the bodies of other demons crashed into the back ranks. The entire charge halted, weapons lowered. The demons stared at the tidal wave of water and bodies crashing down the valley. Foam frothed atop the waves, carrying countless corpses in it. The foam was blood red. The waves shimmered with a magical blue glow. Demons screamed as the water touched them.
The waves ate at their flesh and warped their armor. They tried to flee. But cliffs stood on one side, and a wall of fire raged on the other. There was no way out. The tidal waves swept down the valley. Nathan didn't know how many demons he had killed. A lot. He felt drained. Finally, he let go of the spell, and the wall stopped glowing. The water lost its eerie appearance a moment later, and instead turned blood red from all the demons it had killed. A boom rose from his right. Nathan looked over to see that his plan had played out as expected. The demons crashed into the palisade and knocked down a large section of it. Dust blocked most of his view, but he saw demons vanishing into the cloud. Not that he needed to see the action. The bestial screams and shouts told the story. Slowly, the demons stopped charging into the cloud. They stood in place, looking lost and confused. Sen moved her wall of fire closer to them. The demons began to move forward again. Then Faye burst through the palisade. Her blue flames flickered forward, and dozens of demons melted. The hoplites bounded past her, their spears punching through heads and chests. Their shields shattered horns and broke arms. Within a minute, the demonic charge became a full-blown retreat. Faye cut down many of them, but didn't pursue too far. Hundreds upon hundreds of demons awaited her in the clearing around the portal. They stood out of range of the catapults and Sen's magic. Their weapons were raised, and they hungered for her to come too close so they could surround her. Faye pulled back. She waved to Nathan from beside Sen. Nathan gave her a tired wave back, still stumbling back along the wall.
"You look like you need a nap," Sen said.
Faye's ears pricked up.
"I'll be fine," Nathan said. "I used too much power. If I have to, I'll top up from the binding stone."
"Why not do it now?" Faye asked, tilting her head to one side.
The answer came in the form of a scout, who ran up to the gatehouse from behind. He saluted and came to a stop.
"Bastion!" the scout yelled. "I'm back from the other side of Garrick Pass!"
"The other side?" Faye asked, confused.
"Yes, champion," the scout answered. "Kuda sent two of us out to Lady Nair's tower when we couldn't contact her."
"Report, soldier," Nathan ordered.
He had a bad feeling about this.
"Yes, sir."
The scout paused.
"Lady Nair's tower is under attack by the Amica Federation. They have an entire army there. She's surrounded, sir. The pass is cut off."
Chapter 24
Faye and Sen stared at the scout in shock. For his part, the scout held his salute. Nathan felt that the man's gaze looked rather distant, however. Seeing an invading army in your nation was far from comforting.
"Are any of the enemy heading our way?" Nathan asked.
"No, sir," the scout answered.
He hesitated.
"They seemed focused on the tower, but they had definitely laid siege to it. Both of us saw fire and other sorcery flung from the top of the tower, and a dome barrier was active over the exterior wall."
"Keep an eye on the pass," Nathan ordered. "Alternate with other scouts on a regular basis. Let me know the moment you see Federation soldiers marching toward us."
"Sir,"
the scout barked. He dropped his salute and ran back into the keep. Nathan sighed. The two women looked at him.
"You expected this?" Sen asked.
"I expected something," Nathan said. "A demonic invasion is detectable through the ley lines, as is the buildup of energy. We're fighting an enemy bastion, and he would likely move the moment he felt the portal was close to activating. That's why I wanted Vera to establish a gateway with Leopold. The old man will move against an invading army if he has a clear path, and if he doesn't need to send his champions riding the long way across the countryside."
"Shouldn't he be moving against them regardless?" Sen said, expression darkening.
"That's what we're here for. Plus, he's holding Forzel Valley. I can't complain too much. It's not as though the Federation can oust him in the north." Nathan shrugged. "Although they may be stupid enough to try."
Speaking of stupid, Nathan turned back to the demonic horde gathered below. The clearing swelled with the demonic mass, and the portal showed no signs of weakening. Nathan frowned and tapped into the binding stone. A quick search found what he was looking for. "This must be the last of them," Nathan said. "The demonic energy is running low."
"So they're going to charge us en masse?" Sen asked.
Nathan nodded. "They're only weaker demons, but with their numbers, they might be able to overwhelm us. At least, that's what they think."
"So we crush them here and go help Vera?" Sen looked at Nathan in disbelief. "I don't have the stamina to do that, Nathan. There's as many demons down there as we've already killed, and you look like you're about to collapse. Plus, you don't have the energy left in the binding stone to support us away from the keep."
All excellent points. If Nathan intended to do this the normal way, that is. Nathan nodded. "You're right. That's why we're not going to do that." Sen stared at him.
"We're leaving Vera?"
"No."
"Then what are we doing?" Sen asked, exasperated.
"Trust me, Sen." Nathan ran a hand through his hair as he thought through his next steps. "Faye and I will take the summons down the valley. I need you to follow us and hit the clearing with your sixth rank spell." Sen's eyes widened.
"Are you crazy? Ifrit hasn't taught me how to control it properly. If I cast that now—"
"You'll use up all of your remaining power. I know." Nathan looked at her. "Do it anyway." After a lengthy pause, Sen nodded.
"Okay. What next?"
"Faye covers me while I do my thing," Nathan said. Neither woman seemed convinced. Behind them, the soldiers readied their siege weapons for a second wave. Many of them took the opportunity to drink from canteens or sneak a quick snack. Sweat poured down most of their faces. The valley wasn't hot, but Nathan wouldn't describe it as cool either. He considered that a positive of battling in here. Once outside, he'd be contending with the summer heat. Nathan topped up Faye's sapphire again. Sen pointedly ignored the soft moan that slipped out of Faye, and instead meditated. No doubt she spoke with Ifrit about how to cast her sixth-rank spell as quickly as possible. Once Faye recovered from her pleasure-induced stupor, Nathan gave out orders to the officers to hold fire until given other directions. He didn't want to get hit by a boulder while trying to pull off his trick. Then he, Faye, and Sen leaped down from the wall. The hoplites followed them, streaming out from the gate. The valley floor appeared unmarred from the earlier battle. Whatever power sustained this place had repaired the char marks, cleaned up the piles of gore, and filled in the many craters. If Nathan hadn't seen the earlier devastation, he might think that nothing had happened here. Sen screeched to a halt, well short of the demons. She held her greatsword in front of her, and a red hexagon appeared over it. The surge of power pouring into her spell flooded Nathan's senses, even though he wasn't actively using magical detection. He smelled ash and knew that Ifrit's power was about to show itself. The hoplites fanned out. Nathan directed Faye to one side of the valley, and she vanished in a blink. The demons jeered. The horde deafened Nathan with their cries. At least 2,000 demons clustered in the clearing, brandishing weapons above their heads and screaming in their bestial language. Within moments, the monsters would begin charging uphill. They had the numbers. Something caused them to hold back. But demons weren't the cautious type. Once Nathan crossed an invisible line, the demons charged. They spilled forth like an angry red wave. Nathan drew his sword and slashed across their formation twice. His hand flared with magic both times. The front ranks of the demons collapsed into pieces, but the wave kept charging forward over the corpses. Blue fire consumed the right flank of the demons, but their numbers proved enough to push through the blaze, and many of them survived long enough to reach Faye. Their bodies blistered and bubbled as they swung at her, but they fought until the end.
Fae Scimitar ended their lives with swift, decisive cuts through their torsos or heads. One demon clipped her head, and she stumbled. Three more demons were on her in an instant, their swords raised. Nathan's sword flickered. The hoplites were there first. They slammed the demons aside with their bodies and shields. Their spears impaled the beasts and shoved them aside, and a hoplite pulled Fae up. The beastkin shook off the earlier blow, her tail shuddering from base to tip. Then she nodded to herself and gestured for the hoplites to withdraw. Fae had a connection to Nathan's summons through the binding stone. He let her order them around and turned his attention back to the demons closest to him. Hundreds of angry, bestial faces closed in on him. He tapped into his binding stone and let its power flood him. The world slowed down as he entered the mental world of the binding stone. Nathan used this opportunity to check his memory for the most efficient spell he knew. He needed every drop of power available for what came after this. The binding stone was nearly empty of power. If only Kadria had given him another month, or three. With the right spell in hand, Nathan slipped away from the mental world of the binding stone. Time flowed normally again. The demons roared and continued their blistering pace toward him. Nathan pushed his sword into the ground in front of him with a small flash of power, then cast a third-rank spell. A thin wall of rocks burst from the ground. He cast another third-rank spell, and veins of magma began to run through the wall. The demons were only meters away now. Part of the rock wall collapsed. Lava flooded out and onto the demons who broke through. With one final spell, Nathan blew the wall apart. Lava, razor-sharp rocks, and blades of wind cut into the oncoming horde. The front ranks went down. Then the ranks behind them went down as they ran onto the lava and rocks. The charge faltered. The demons at the rear kept pushing forward. A crush formed, and the demons pushed many of their kin to their deaths in the lava. The corpses mounted up, and they made a bridge. Nathan obliterated the corpses with another surge of lava and wind. He continued to stick with third-rank spells, with the occasional supercharged one. The hoplites began to throw their spears into the demons. Eventually, the demons looked for a way around. They pushed toward Fae and found blue death in the form of being melted. The hoplites formed a shield wall and held the demons back. A few minutes passed. War cries rose up again. The demons charged, convinced this push would work, unlike all the other ones. It didn't, but the demons never stopped trying. Nathan glanced back and saw Sen's hexagon glowing blindingly bright. Her crimson coat swirled around her with the force of the power she had summoned. With a great boom, Sen cast her spell. Then all sound vanished. The demons froze. They tried to shout, but couldn't hear themselves. They looked around in confusion. Then one pointed behind them, then another. Soon, all the demons turned and stared at the portal. Or what had been the portal. Where there had once been a gaping hole in the world, there was now a 100-meter-tall whirling inferno of flames and fury. Orange embers flickered off the tornado. When they hit the ground, each burst into a conflagration large enough to consume a dozen demons. The tornado itself burned blazing white on the inside, and red flames licked the air around it. The entire world seemed to shimmer with the heat from the tornado. Nathan felt himself sweat, even this far away. Standing where he was, the inferno tornado made him feel as though he was standing in front of a blazing furnace. Huge plumes of smoke choked the air. His sense of smell told him that the world was turning to ash. Huge licks of fire shot out from the base of the tornado. Every demon in the clearing turned to ash within seconds. They didn't even have time to understand what was happening before they died. Sen flung her arm out, and the tornado moved. Every demon screamed. For the first time since Sen had cast her tornado spell, sound returned. Then an enormous arm of flame sprung forth from the tornado and consumed that sound. The screaming of countless demons was snuffed out in an instant. Those that survived ran. Their eyes were filled with a primal terror. They didn't care about the lava on the ground, or the sharp rocks, or the corpses of their brethren. The demons knew that death lay behind them. They had to fight and win, or they would all die. Nathan's sword shimmered, and he cut down a row of demons. More charged him, frothing at the mouth. They moved faster than he thought weak demons could. The hoplites tried to hold them back, but some got through. Several blows rained down on Nathan, and he knew he'd be feeling the bruises for days. He flexed his fist and turned every demon within 50 meters into meaty chunks. The hoplites bounded away before he finished his spell. A waste of magic, but he needed to end this. On the other side, Faye chased dozens of crazed demons who had made it past her. The demons ran like they were possessed. Their speed was nothing compared to Faye, and she cut them down before they reached the palisade. The tornado continued to blaze. Sen collapsed to her knees, her breath coming out in choking sobs. The spell had a minimum casting time, and she needed to keep it running with Ifrit's obscene power draw. Her hand shook as she held it up, trying to keep the tornado from going out of control. Demons slipped out of the portal again as Sen's control wavered. The tornado weakened and hovered high in the air. Nathan approached the portal, ignoring the pests near it. The level of demonic energy powering the portal was low. Low enough to safely pull off what he wanted to do. "Faye!" he shouted. He gestured for her to deal with the demons. The beastkin charged across the battlefield, pulling the hoplites with her. She made quick work of the enemy. Turning inward, Nathan drew on the binding stone. He drew on every ounce of energy it had available. Then he felt his way along the ley lines. He snaked his way out from the keep and through Garrick Pass. After a little while, he found the cairn beneath Vera's tower. All ley lines were connected to one another, which meant that Vera's tower was connected to his binding stone. Nathan imprinted the route to Vera's tower in his mind. Then he gathered all of his power and began to cast a spell. No geometric shapes appeared around his body. This was binding stone magic, a form of magic unique to bastions. Binding stone magic didn't use the rank system of sorcery. The way that Nathan controlled the binding stone, created summons, and built his fortress used this method of magic. Bastions used the innate power of the binding stone to accomplish feats otherwise considered impossible. Magical scientists deemed this to be manipulating reality. The ability to use a binding stone was the true hallmark of a bastion's power. Nathan finished his preparations and focused himself. The inferno had vanished, the last of its embers burning up in the darkness above him. Demons began pouring out of the portal again. Faye shouted something. Ignoring all of this, Nathan cast his spell. He connected Vera's cairn with his binding stone. With a crack like thunder, the shimmering white and black tear in reality vanished. A blast of wind knocked everyone down in the clearing. Nathan collapsed, and all went black. Chapter 25.
Nathan!
Nathan stirred. He thought he heard Faye shouting.
Nathan, get up! Faye said. Something's wrong with the portal.
A sense of deja vu struck Nathan. Part of his mind panicked. Had he sent himself back in time? He opened his eyes and remembered where and when he was. Something was wrong with the portal because he had cast a spell on it. Faye was simply panicking.
I feel like I got hit by a catapult, he groaned,
pushing himself to his feet. Fay yanked him up and let him lean on her. He appreciated both the help and the soft cushions pressing against him.
"Would that even hurt you?" Fay asked, eyes wide.
"Yes. Believe it or not, getting hit by a gigantic flying boulder would hurt me," Nathan drawled. "You're a lot sturdier than I am, now that you have your first gem."
"Oh."
Nathan looked around. No demons remained. The last of their remains seeped into the cracks in the ground and broke down into... Nathan realized he didn't know what happened to the bodies of the demons in the portal. Outside, their bodies rotted and collapsed like normal. But in this strange place, something swept them away like so much garbage. But the invasion was over. No more demons spilled from the portal. Fay and the hoplites had cleaned up the few that had remained after he cast his spell. Where the tear in reality had stood was a much smaller hole in space, roughly the size of a large double-door gate. It shined bright white and didn't shift in tone or color. Nothing walked through it. Nathan frowned. He had hoped that somebody on the other side would notice this and save him the trouble of going to the other side.
"We have to go through," he said.
He pushed himself off Faye's shoulders and stood under his own power. His body ached. The binding stone rung in his mind, empty almost to the last drop. How long had it been since he had pushed himself this far? When he had fought Kadria, she had destroyed the fortress and directly attacked his network of ley lines and binding stones before he even had a chance to use his full power. If anything reminded him that he had fallen in status as a bastion, it was this feeling of impotence. He had a single binding stone, with only just enough power to repel a mildly dangerous demonic horde and pull off a nifty trick. He hadn't even fought a messenger, or even multiple invasions at once. It would be a while before he reached the level of power he once held.
"Nathan, are you all right?" Fay asked softly.
"I just pushed myself too far," he muttered. "Forgot my own limits."
"Shouldn't we pull back then? The portal is..."
Fay began to say.
"No," he said. "We need to go through. We have only a few minutes before it collapses. I'll have the hoplites carry Sen back."
Sen kneeled on the ground behind them, where she had cast her tornado. She hadn't moved an inch, and her breathing was clearly labored. But Nathan needed to push on. He strode up to this new gateway, ignoring Fay's whines about his health. Then he stepped through. Fay followed a moment later. The white of the portal blinded him, filling his entire vision. It faded quickly. The pair had been transported to an entirely different location. Fay gripped his arm and looked around uncertainly.
"Isn't this..." Fay trailed off.
Her tail rubbed against Nathan's leg.
"Vera's tower. I connected the portal to her gateway," Nathan explained.
They were on the third highest floor of her tower, immediately below her planning room. The gateway glowed behind them, bright white. Nobody else was up here. The tower was eerily empty. Each level was donut-shaped, with stairwells leading up and down on opposite ends, and the empty center leading all the way to the bottom. Clangs and shouts echoed from below. Nathan walked to the edge of the platform and glanced down. Fay stood behind him, her grip on his arm tightening as he got closer to the edge. She mumbled something about being careful. Vera's armored summons clustered on the bottom floor, right at the entrance. The door had been destroyed. Spearmen wearing tan and gray uniforms pushed their way inside, but the summons held them back. Corpses piled up, and a pool of blood coated the floor. Two levels above the fray, Vera hurled balls of fire and light at the attackers. The corpses disintegrated from her onslaught and allowed her summons to push the enemy back to the door.
"Are they trying to wear her down?" Fay asked.
"Wave tactics are pretty normal to deal with sorcerers," Nathan said. "Vera has her cairn, so she can't run out of raw power, but her stamina will run dry eventually.
She'll overtax her body from casting too many spells. Then she'll either make a mistake, allowing a champion to capture or kill her, or she'll collapse and the fight is over.
That's horrible, Faye said.
Given they're using humans for the wave, yes it is.
Nathan grimaced.
Usually summons are used. At least before the war. Perhaps he had been naive in thinking that if he stopped the Empire from falling, then everything would be better. Nathan looked for a quick way down. He only saw the staircases.
How come I'm not tired? Faye asked.
I did tell you that the enhancement changes you. The Binding Stone makes you superhuman. That's why sorcerers often become champions or bastions. It's one of the few reliable ways to cast spells above 6th rank. Nathan cursed when he didn't see a faster way down.
Suddenly, a familiar voice shouted, "You're wasting your effort, Nair!"
"Sunstorm," Nathan said. "We're running out of time. Let's go."
He leaped down. Faye squawked and followed him, still holding on to his arm. Her quick reaction time allowed her to stick with him. Despite landing in a roll, Nathan still felt the pain from dropping several stories at once. He felt the fractures and forced himself to ignore the pain blossoming along his limbs. Faye spotted his discomfort and pulled him over her shoulder. He grimaced, but used her superior strength and speed to cross to the other side of the floor. Vera spun as they approached, her staff glowing with triangles. She stared at them in disbelief, ready to cast her spells at any moment.
"You look like you don't want to see me," Nathan said. "I have a way out. We need to go now."
"How?" Vera tried to say. She shook her head. "Forget it. I'm learning not to question how you do what you do. Lead the way."
Nathan had expected more resistance. This was her tower, after all, her inheritance.
As they ran for the stairwell up, he glanced down and saw the enemy push through her summons. A seemingly endless wave of Federation soldiers, hell-bent on breaking in and killing Vera. Their ferocity was unusual. Somebody drove them to this level of fervor. Or maybe they thought their commander was more likely to kill them than Vera. Either way, Nathan found the Federation soldiers unnerving. How did Vera feel after watching them die in droves just to capture her tower? There was only one floor below the gateway when the Federation completely overwhelmed the summons. The soldiers began shouting and pointing at them. Vera flung spells in response. She looked at Nathan while biting her lip.
"Don't look at me," he said. "I burned all my energy to get here."
"I can tell," she replied. Nathan felt something nearby. A strong power. He dropped, letting go of Faye. A wicked short sword cut through the space where his head had been. A boot slammed into his stomach and nearly knocked him off the edge. Faye grabbed him before that happened. Sparks flew as Sunstorm traded blows with Faye. Blue flames burst into existence. Sunstorm vanished in a puff of shadow. Faye hoisted Nathan up.
"Keep moving," he growled, stumbling toward the gateway.
Vera looked around wildly, staff glowing with a readied spell. A pair of shadows appeared, one racing right toward Vera. Her beam of light burst uselessly on Sunstorm's body. Vera's eyes widened, and she raised her staff. Faye's flames disintegrated Sunstorm's shadow instantly, as if it wasn't there to begin with. Turning, the beastkin intercepted Sunstorm before she reached Nathan. The two champions traded blows. Faye's flames ate at Sunstorm's armor and clung to the assassin's skin. Nathan ignored them and climbed the stairs.
"What about Faye?" Vera shouted.
"She can handle herself," he said.
Grunts and clashes of steel sounded behind them as they ran for the gateway. Nathan paused before the portal and waited. Faye could handle herself, couldn't she? Vera stared at the glowing white gateway.
"How?"
"Don't ask, go. I don't know how long we have," Nathan said.
Vera ran through the gateway.
something appeared nearby. Nathan felt her. He ducked, blocked with his sword. Sunstorm's sword crashed into his and bowled him over. She growled at him. Her armor and clothes had been burned away, leaving her almost naked. She was left wearing only the onyx gem in her collarbone and her black panties. Otherwise, her olive skin was on full display. Oh, and the burn marks. Blue flames still clung to her, burning at patches of her skin and blackening them. Sunstorm was going to look like she had flown a little too close to the sun after this fight. Faye crashed into Sunstorm before the assassin readied another attack. Rising to his feet, Nathan yelled, "Faye, we are leaving." Sunstorm's head snapped toward Nathan. Before she could do anything, Faye tripped her. The beastkin darted toward Nathan. A short sword flew at Faye's back, but she spun and batted it aside. In a puff of shadow, Sunstorm vanished and reappeared right above the gateway. She wasn't giving up, Nathan realized. Faye hurled a jet of blue flames at the other champion while holding Nathan back. Sunstorm's eyes widened. She saw her defeat, no doubt. If she blocked their way, she'd take the blast of flames head-on and would then have to fight Faye right afterward. If she ran, then both Nathan and Faye would escape through the portal. Sunstorm glared at Faye. The assassin ran a finger across her throat the moment before the flames reached her. Then she vanished into her shadows. The next moment, Faye and Nathan ran through the gateway. The hoplites and Vera stood guard on the other end. Some soldiers had wandered down as well. Seconds passed. The gateway remained open. Nathan collapsed on the ground and allowed Faye to stroke his hair. Her tail brushed against his back. He was spent. Nobody came through. Eventually, the gateway collapsed. The demonic portal didn't reappear. Over the course of the next several minutes, the black sky regained its color, and the light from below turned purple again. The monochrome world they had fought the demons in turned back into a hellscape. Everybody cheered. Nathan rose to his feet and stumbled back up to the palisade. The soldiers who had come down to see what had happened followed him back. When he stood atop the wall, the remaining defenders watched him in eager anticipation. He held up his sword and cheered. The soldiers joined in, saluting and throwing their hands into the air. They had won their first victory. Nathan left out that they needed to win another. The Federation was coming. But for now, they deserved to celebrate. Chapter 26.
"Have you gone insane?" Kadria screeched.
"Given I'm standing in a void talking to a demonic messenger?" "Maybe," Nathan said. He crossed his arms. Kadria paced back and forth in her strange void world. He had visited her immediately after the invasion. The fact that his binding stone was empty concerned him, and there was an incoming enemy army. He doubted she'd help, but maybe he'd get lucky. Instead, she shouted his ear off the moment he walked in. Nathan looked around. This place seemed larger somehow. More palatial. Nathan didn't keep track of the furnishings, but he swore there were a few more. And the room was definitely larger, and not in the mind-bending way. The outline of a rug shifted as Kadria padded back and forth, her bare feet tugging at fibers Nathan couldn't see. Was she leeching off the binding stone to feather her own nest? Nathan shook the thought away. He didn't have the time right now to concern himself with Kadria. And a slightly larger bedroom for the messenger was the least of his worries. "Funny. You'll find yourself enslaved in somebody else's void if you keep pulling stunts like that," Kadria growled. Her eyes flashed. Nathan noticed that her pupils had enlarged, giving her the appearance of having almost solid red eyes. Her horns had blackened as well. Gone was the messenger who lusted after his crotch. In her place was a genuine demonic general. Kadria terrified him right now. He hid the shudder she sent down his spine,
but he knew he'd be having nightmares about this. If she had shown up with this appearance when they first met, he'd never have accepted her deal.
"What's that supposed to mean?"
he asked quietly.
"What do you think it means?"
He paused and thought about it.
"You said I didn't need to worry about messengers yet, that the portal was too small to concern them."
Kadria rolled her eyes.
"Are you stupid? There must be a messenger behind every portal. Who do you think creates the things? Do you think those armies of hulking muscle brains are traversing trans-dimensional space by themselves?"
"What?" Nathan blurted out.
"Hold on. But you said..."
"I said that a messenger wouldn't come through the portal." Kadria ran her hand over her face and glared at Nathan.
"Look, why do you think the portals get worse the more you suppress them? Shouldn't it be the opposite? Use your brain. I turned up when I did because I was looking for competence. I found it at the end of everything, in a world that had defeated so many other messengers."
Nathan felt like the world had been ripped out from underneath him.
"Other messengers are doing the same thing you are?"
"Not exactly," Kadria hedged, her tone uneasy. "I can't be too specific. Not yet."
"Why not? We seem to be in this together. Or aren't we?"
Kadria rolled her eyes.
"We are. And we'll both be very, very dead if I say the wrong thing at the wrong time. You probably won't understand this, but let's just say that the walls have ears."
Nathan pointedly looked at the closest wall. It didn't appear to have an ear, or the outline of anything at all on it. Kadria kicked him.
"God, you people are stupid," she muttered.
"You mean goddess," Nathan corrected automatically, hiding a grin. He had successfully taunted her.
"Sure," Kadria waved a hand. "In any case, each messenger has its own goal. They're looking for things. But you know what I know every messenger wants? Servants. Useful servants. Servants who can manipulate portals using binding stones, which is a power I thought unique to messengers." "Where did you even learn to do that?" Kadria snapped, growing irritable.
A lull fell over the room. Nathan rubbed the bridge of his nose while Kadria huffed and puffed at him. Then Kadria coughed and straightened herself up. Not that there was much for her to straighten up, given her lack of attire.
"Sorry," she mumbled, "but you Bastions tend to be so terrible at working with your binding stones. Where did you learn to manipulate a demonic portal?"
Nathan frowned.
"It was something that an old comrade of mine worked on in my timeline. His theory only really worked on weaker portals, because the power necessary to close a portal is equal to the demonic energy left over. Plus, closing a portal early will trigger a cascade."
"But you've used it before?" Kadria asked.
"I've tested it on weaker portals," Nathan shrugged. "And my comrade used it in an evacuation once. That's when we learned the spell caused cascades. For what little it mattered at that point, Trafome was already a ruin by the time he closed the portal, so creating a bunch of new demonic portals there was a drop in the bucket."
Kadria clicked her tongue.
"Just another oddity of your world, I suppose. So many little things drew me there."
Her mutterings continued for several minutes. Nathan didn't pick up anything of particular value from them, and eventually grew bored.
"If you didn't notice what we did in my timeline, why does it matter here?" Nathan asked. "Because this world isn't a maelstrom of death, destruction, and despair?" she asked rhetorically, looking at him as if he were an idiot, which had been her default look for most of this visit, to be truthful.
"That makes a difference to messengers?"
"A big difference," Kadria said.
She placed one hand high in the air and moved it up and down like a fish. In your world, large invasions, cascades, trigem champions, and entire countries being destroyed were normal. A messenger knew your world was serious business, which attracted major players such as myself. But the individual events don't stand out.
Kadria lowered her hand, and her motions became slower, but much more deliberate. Like waves, Nathan realized. She was making a wave pattern with her hand.
In this world, the level of activity is far lower. Fewer large invasions, very few cascades, and only the Kurai Peninsula has been destroyed. So every big event stands out.
Nathan licked his lips. So by converting the demonic portal into a gateway like that, I made a big wave in a small pond?
Exactly. And the messenger behind this portal definitely noticed.
Kadria scowled.
And those twins aren't the sort I wanted you to attract. They're the slow burn type. I figured you'd have a year or two before they took an interest in you. Then you could flirt for a while before they took you seriously, by which point I could deal with them.
You know them?
Unfortunately.
She poked her horns, which had turned back to their typical shade of creamy white.
Same breed of messenger.
She prodded his crotch with her foot. In a few ways. Although they don't have my background, and my objective differs from theirs.
Nathan left the void room shortly afterward, with a mumbling from Kadria about how she'd think of some way to help deal with the other messengers. She offered no help for his current predicament, and instead gave him a look that suggested he needed to dig his own way out. As much as he wanted to complain, knowing that he had inadvertently attracted the attention of a pair of messengers bothered him. He welcomed Kadria's help, even if she would be busy for a while. It ate at him that he didn't question help from a messenger. Had he really fallen so far that he accepted Kadria's presence in his life? Part of him even felt unhappy that she hadn't pulled down his pants when he had visited. Nathan shook off his discomfort and left his office. He stopped by a window. The night was moonless and overcast. He couldn't see anything outside, other than the lamps on the walls and lights carried by patrolling guards. The civilian inhabitants of the fortress surely knew something was wrong. First, the soldiers had all piled into the keep, which was a surefire sign of a demonic invasion. Then the men had all come out and cracked open barrels of ale and wine. At some point after the commotion had started, the tavern opened. People who couldn't sleep, or spouses worried about their significant other in the guards, had gathered to wait there. Then the soldiers joined them. The celebrations were ongoing, and Nathan could hear their raucous cheering. But some guards patrolled the walls, and more than a few had noticed that the scouts were busy. Keen-eyed officers ushered their troops into the barracks and began closing up the kegs. Only a few had been briefed, but word spread fast. All the officers would learn the full details when their companies were back in the barracks. Nathan wasn't too concerned about the celebrations. He doubted he would need his soldiers at the crack of dawn, so any hangovers could be dealt with. Although he had to remind himself that these soldiers were relatively green. He was used to men and women who could win a battle, knock back their booze into the early hours of the morning, have a quick nap, and then fight another battle as soon as they woke up. Kadria was right. This timeline had yet to turn into a pit of despair and destruction. The soldiers had yet to train themselves into boozy warriors. Maybe they wouldn't need to. Nathan stepped away from the window and made his way downstairs. Few guards patrolled the keep at this time. Those that did saluted him as he passed them. Eventually, he spotted who he was looking for. Anna and Vera stood outside of one of the receiving rooms.
"We've known each other for years. Once Leopold is here," Anna tried to say.
"If Leopold comes here," Vera interrupted.
"I appreciate your concern, Anna, but I lost my tower due to my own failings.
and given Leopold's general inaction, I doubt he'll be saving me from my own missteps anytime soon.
Don't say that, Vera! Vera!
Anna shouted after the retreating sorceress. She let out a huff when Vera continued to walk away in the opposite direction that Nathan came from.
I'm assuming she's taking the loss of her tower hard, Nathan muttered.
Anna turned to face him and curtsied.
Bastian Nathan, my deepest thanks for providing me safe harbor during this time of crisis.
Nathan stared at her. She rolled her eyes.
Goddess, you're really not one for formalities, are you? The least I can do is thank you for protecting me. From the sounds of it, the Federation means business.
They do. They have a champion whose gem ability allows her to specialize in assassination, Nathan said.
He nodded in the direction that Vera had retreated.
So she's taking it hard?
Why don't we take a seat and have some tea?
Anna suggested, and walked into the nearby room.
I think talking about Vera is the least we need to cover. I hear you used so much magic that you nearly collapsed.
Nathan followed her inside. Hopefully, this turned out to be a friendly chat and not an interrogation. Anna straightened out her skirt before sitting down. Her clothes were much simpler than normal, consisting of a frilly collared shirt, a black pleated skirt, and stockings. No jewelry and minimal sign of makeup. Not that Anna needed much. Then again, it was past midnight, and Nathan had sent a message to Anna to travel here as quickly as possible. If she had arrived in her nightgown, he wouldn't have batted an eye. Instead, she had put in at least some effort to appear like a countess. Two empty cups sat on the table in the middle of the room. Like most of the receiving rooms in the fortress, this one consisted of several plush sofa chairs around a single coffee table. This particular coffee table had the universal emblem of the Watcher Omria engraved into the glass. In the corner sat a long table where coffee and snacks could be prepared. Kuda stepped out from that corner with two fresh cups of coffee, then whisked away the empty ones.
Thank you, Kuda, Anna said with a smile.
She fixed Nathan with a glare.
I'm regretting lending him to you. I haven't had a good coffee since he left.
You were here not that long ago, Nathan replied.
Then I haven't had a good coffee in my manor since he left, Anna corrected. Maybe I should move in.
Right now, you don't have a choice, so feel free to assess your new lodgings against your manor, Nathan said dryly.
Anna shot him a sardonic smile. He didn't grace it with a response, and instead sipped his coffee. After a few moments, Anna raised the topic from earlier.
Yes, Vera is upset over her tower. More than that, she's upset that she defended it alone. No reinforcements from the Empire. Nothing from Leopold. Nothing from me.
Anna grimaced.
You had demons to deal with, so you get a pass. But I don't, even though most of my private army is partying outside and calling themselves demon slayers.
Suppressing a sigh, Anna drained her cup and asked for another. Kuda was already there and exchanged the cups. A slice of chocolate cake appeared from somewhere as well. Nathan eyed the beastkin, wondering where he hid the dessert. The table behind Kuda was bare, besides a coffee percolator powered by a built-in fire enchantment and a handful of empty cups and plates.
I don't blame her for being upset, but I don't see it being productive, Anna said.
Give her time, Nathan said. I pulled her out of the fire. She's still processing things.
I would if we had time,
Anna bit her lip.
And if you didn't need her. I'm supposed to be the countess who supports you, but the distinct impression I get from my officers is that...
She trailed off, her eyes wandering to a corner of the room. Nathan waited patiently for her to finish her thought, or for her to change the subject. Anna sighed.
I find it difficult to believe that I am, in any way, your superior. My officers told me how the battle played out. They stood behind a wall, unable to see the enemy, and fired catapult shot after catapult shot into the distance. By contrast, you and your champions flooded the portal, defended a breach in the wall, created a tornado made of fire, and still found time to save Vera.
That's normal in demonic invasions. There's a reason Tri-Gem champions become legends, Nathan said. The gap between ordinary humans and champions is significant.
Of course, but where does that leave me?
Anna raised an eyebrow.
I can gain the wealth and power that my father felt our family deserved, but all I'm doing to earn it is asking you nicely. I felt that my agreement with Vera would help you, as she would assist you, but she's been less than cooperative.
You asked for my help precisely because she wasn't cooperative, Nathan pointed out. Besides, she did help me out.
And now you've sacrificed a lot to save her. Probably more than she'll ever give you in return.
Anna fixed him with her gaze.
Don't lie to me. The soldier said that Faye practically had to carry you up to the wall. Vera even admitted you couldn't fight when you helped her. What happens if the Federation arrives here in the morning?
Nathan finished his cup and placed it on the table. Unlike with Anna's coffee, Kuda didn't instantly whisk his away for a refill. Let's lay this on the table, then, Nathan said, his tone serious. First, the Federation probably won't march on this fortress straight away. They have no way of knowing that we've been seriously weakened by the demonic invasion. What they do know is that we showed up in Vera's tower despite that invasion. A normal Bastion would assume that means I crushed the invasion without any real difficulty and play it cautiously.
Anna nodded, her eyes bright and expression focused.
Nathan continued while raising two fingers. Second, even if they do show up, the fortress is well fortified. The barrier will prevent any siege weapons or champions from knocking down the walls easily. The ditches, walls, and your soldiers, yes, that means you are helping, can keep any non-magical assailants at bay. Raising a third finger, he said, Third, it won't take long to recover my power. I'll have enough to top Faye up in the morning. Once Vera is feeling better, she can help defend. Most of my summons survived the demonic invasion, so I don't need to waste power recreating them. And although Sen's tired, she should be fine in the morning. Even I'll be able to fight. The Binding Stone is low on power, but I can use my own sorcery.
Anna took a bite of her cake while the explanation soaked in, her gaze wandering.
Kuda placed another cup of coffee in front of Nathan. Noticeably, there was no cake for him.
Sen's the name of the bandit girl you took in, right? Anna asked.
You met her last time you were here, Nathan said.
Anna said.
She sipped her coffee.
I have two questions about that. More, really, but two for now.
Nathan had expected this to come at some point.
If she had the power to use such powerful magic before, why didn't she use it against you? Or against me?
Anna frowned.
You seem to capture her far too easily, and I don't remember Vera mentioning anything about any tornadoes of flame.
Nathan coughed.
Actually, Sen tried to cast that spell both times we met her.
What?
Yes. Fortunately, a sixth-rank spell takes too long to cast in a normal battle to be usable without proper support, so she never succeeded. But she tried, Nathan explained.
Anna stared at him, her cup frozen in front of her lips.
You mean when you fought her in front of Trontia the day after you arrived?
Nathan nodded.
Slowly, Anna placed her cup on the table. It shook as she let it go, and Anna quickly placed her hands together in her lap.
Kuda's eyes narrowed, and his tail moved for the first time since Nathan had met him.
I believe I owe you an additional thank you, Bastion, Anna said, her voice flat.
Do not blow this off, Anna snapped.
She froze, closed her eyes, and schooled her expression.
Thank you for preventing Trontia from being turned into an ashen wasteland. The description of the power of her spell made a strong impression on my officers. They believed that she must have been holding back as a bandit.
Anna rubbed her face. Goddess, how did you even recruit her? And don't say it's due to your skill in bed. Nathan loudly slurped his coffee. This earned him a glare, and he grinned at Anna.
Fine, keep your secrets, she muttered. Although I can't believe both she and Yefela are both interested in you. They'll tear you apart once they find out.
You think they don't know? Nathan laughed.
This is funny to you?
Anna asked incredulously. Nathan blinked, realizing she was serious, and even a little angry. He glanced at Kuda, who shook his head.
You don't know much about beastkin, do you? Nathan said.
Don't patronize me.
I'm not, but I'm used to people at least knowing that beastkin are polyamorous, Nathan explained.
Anna looked at him blankly. Then she turned her head to face Kuda and raised a questioning eyebrow.
Kuda coughed. It means that we are willing to share our partners, in both the sexual and romantic senses of the word, mistress.
Sexual, Anna repeated.
Yes, different races of beastkin have different preferences, but it is a common trait across our entire species, Kuda explained. Hence young Yefela's willingness to pursue Bastion Nathan, even though he is romantically and sexually involved with Sen.
Anna faced Nathan again, her cheeks flushed.
I don't remember Sen being a beastkin.
There's a concept for this sort of thing happening with bastions, Nathan said, feeling sheepish. The beastkin don't care about the feelings of the humans. This means the human champions get caught up in the flow of the beastkin champions.
This was exactly what happened between Nathan and Vala.
Vala had been his first champion in Falmir, and his bond with her had been strong. Except the beastkin he picked up in the ruins of the Empire didn't really care. They saw Nathan as a strong mate, their bastion, and ripe for sharing. Vala could push back, but the beastkin didn't play along. Or even if they did, something invariably happened that broke everything down. The animalistic traits of the beastkin caused some unique sexual problems at times. Vala eventually gave up and let the beastkin join her, and that opened the floodgates.
I don't remember reading anything like this, Anna mumbled. And a lot of legendary bastions don't sleep with all of their champions like Leopold does.
The Empire has the largest proportion of beastkin champions of any nation.
It comes with the territory, Nathan said.
You could say no, Anna suggested.
Nathan loudly slurped his coffee and ignored Anna's glare.
Fine, she said, and stood up. Then she mumbled, something to keep in mind for the future, I suppose.
Did you say something? Nathan asked.
Yes, but you don't need to worry about it for now.
Anna smiled.
Good night, Nathan. I suppose I'll see you in the morning, or the afternoon, if nobody invades. I wouldn't mind some additional sleep.
Kuda looked unimpressed at the idea of Anna sleeping in until the afternoon. Nathan got the distinct impression that Anna's dream of staying in bed would not come to fruition. With this conversation over, Nathan slipped away. He made his way to his bedroom. The hallways were silent. Everybody was asleep, save for a few patrolling guards. The celebration outside had ended. Despite all of this, Nathan felt wide awake. The knowledge of an impending battle pumped adrenaline through his body. His nerves seared his body like fire, and it took everything he had to move calmly. Maybe this was also a side effect of using too much magic. Nathan usually kept his calm better, but he felt on edge. His years of experience didn't help him tonight. He pushed open the door to his room.
Oh, you're finally back, Faye chirped from his bed.
Chapter 27 Faye lay on top of Nathan's bed, her arms wrapped around his pillow. Her body was pressed into the soft fabric, hiding much of her body. He noticed that her hair was messy, probably because she had been rubbing her face against his pillow. He also noticed that she was naked, save for one of his jackets. Her bushy tail was the only thing hiding the tantalizing curves of her bare ass. Faye held as much attraction to him now as she had in his timeline.
"You realize I have to sleep on that, right?" Nathan said, pointing at his bed.
Faye rubbed her face against his pillow and wiggled her entire body from side to side.
"All the more reason for me to do this."
The room smelled more of Faye than Nathan at this point. How long had she been in here, he wondered. Her uniform was strewn across the floor, and his used clothes hamper had been rifled through.
"Bad kitten," Nathan said as he sat on the edge of the bed.
He scratched behind Faye's cat ears. She mewled, arching her back. Her eyes curved as she looked up at him and grinned.
"You seem to like it when I'm bad," Faye purred.
The beastkin shifted her body to the side so that she was pressing her bare legs against him. Her heat poured into him. She licked her lips and rubbed her tail against his back. Nathan remembered her words from before the battle and realized that Faye was following through. Her arousal was practically dripping onto the bed. She had proven herself and wanted to claim her prize.
"Aren't you tired after the battle?" Nathan asked gently.
He ruffled her hair. Faye shook her head.
"I'm fine, and I know you are too."
She grinned.
Rather than fine, Nathan would describe Faye as running on fumes. Her eyes were lidded and flickered shut every few seconds. Her ears twitched constantly. She purred incessantly, but her tail rubbed against his back at inconsistent intervals. She was tired, but knew what she wanted.
"You like it here?" Nathan asked.
Faye mumbled. "It's so much nicer than my village. I get more food, and it's far better. You're nicer than the Meisters ever were, and let me decide what I want to do. I never thought I'd actually become a champion. A lot of the other beastkin taken into the academy were sent back to their villages. I was told that most champions in training never receive an enhancement."
She rubbed her face into his pillow. A few seconds later, she came up for air.
"But you made me your champion right away." "You believed in me," Faye said, her green eyes bright and watery. "My instincts have been screaming at me to do so many things to you, but I've known that I needed to prove myself to you."
Nathan blinked.
"Instincts?"
Faye grinned at him, her face lewd. She reached behind herself with a hand. Her fingers came up sticky.
"Instincts. I'm a beastkin. I want a mate. I'm of age. If I hadn't been taken to the academy, I'd probably have found somebody in my village by now. But I know they wouldn't be anywhere near as good as you. Sin doesn't get it. You probably don't either."
Nathan rubbed her head again. She purred, and he listened closely. The sound was happy. Genuinely happy. He did get it. He simply hadn't realized Faye had fallen this hard for him. The Faye he had known had been more standoffish, wary. Her experiences with war, bastions, and humans in general had led her to take a slower approach with him. Wooing her had taken time, and her declaration that he was her mate had been a hesitant one, as if admitting it would cause him to disappear. He had never probed the Aphela from his timeline about what had happened in the past to make her so careful. Now he wished he had. Had she fallen head over heels for her first bastion, only to lose him and become heartbroken? Faye mewled, and Nathan realized it didn't matter. The Faye in front of him was the real Faye. Right now, he could only touch, feel, and hear one Aphela, and she was the beastkin rubbing against him in his bedroom. Nathan shut away his worries and thoughts relating to the Aphela from his timeline. He didn't forget her, but he did his best to stop actively comparing this Fae to the version he had known. He wanted to make this Fae happy. A moan rose within Fae's throat as Nathan ran his hand along her taut ass. Her tail wagged. She felt slick to the touch, and Nathan realized this was sweat rather than arousal.
"Why don't we clean up first?" Nathan whispered in Faye's ear.
It twitched, tickling his face.
"Don't we do that after?" Faye said with wide eyes.
"We can do both."
Nathan began to strip off outside the bathroom, as if to lure Faye over to him. She stared with wide eyes as more of his skin showed. When his cock popped out, already half erect, she nearly panted. Faye bounced off the bed and flung off the jacket. Her breasts jiggled from the movement. Nathan noticed the slickness of her thighs and the small, wet patch on the bed. As he led her into the shower, Faye became handsy. Her fingers played with his length, and she gasped as he began to grow. She yelped when the shower's cold water splashed over her, then glared at him.
"We are cleaning up, you realize," he said.
She rolled her eyes, then kneeled in front of him. He admired her plump, naked body. Her voluptuous curves were on show, and she rubbed her hands over her massive breasts with a grin. His eyes wandered lower. He took in her thick, fleshy thighs and the hint of pink he saw between them.
"I'm your mate. I'll do the cleaning my way," she said, interrupting his thoughts.
"Really? I haven't said that you're my mate," Nathan teased.
Her tongue lapped up the liquid dripping from him. She eyed him.
"Maybe, but I'm still your mate. I'm your first champion, so I get to be your mate."
"What about Sen?"
"What about her?" Faye huffed and pumped his length. "I was here first. She can join in if she wants."
Nathan held back a laugh and ruffled her hair. Faye grinned and continued to harden him up. Her eyes widened.
"You're a little bigger than I expected," she mumbled.
"Keep going," he said.